Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Tuesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Daniel Foster of National Review Online is in for Jim Garrity, who is winding his way up to New York City today. If you happen to be a frequent viewer of the Hannity program, he'll be on the Great American Panel tonight. And even if you're not a frequent viewer, go ahead and tune in. It'll be somewhere between 9:30 and 10 tonight. Dan, good news, bad news, crazy news, as always. We're usually not a big fan of people being out of money, but when it comes to the Democratic convention, hey, why not? They plan this $36.6 million goal of throwing this huge party known as Carolina Fest the weekend before their three-day convention starts, which is Labor Day weekend. And, Dan, they're just $27 million short of that $36.6 million goal, which either means they have not been very responsible with the money they've raised or nobody's all that excited about the Democrats coming to Charlotte.
Yeah, they missed it by that much. Huh? just coming up shy of their fundraising total. I think that the Democrats started to realize months ago that picking North Carolina probably wasn't their best bet. I remember seeing a story last week that they're going to try and pass a bipartisan bill, which is good news, in North Carolina in the legislature that would allow liquor sales on Sunday while the Democrats are in town. So maybe that'll, I don't know, bring some people out. But yeah, the event that they canceled was a NASCAR-based event at a speedway outside of Charlotte. That probably, again, makes sense. Yeah, I'm sure they can find some kind of all-organic, free-range restaurant to have some kind of party at in the greater Charlotte area. But, yeah, I don't know what their fundraising troubles are, but I know the president's sure raising a heck of a lot of money. Maybe he can just roll out to Beverly Hills, hold a couple of quick dinners, and, you know, fill that $27 million gap for the DNC so that they can have their little party the week before the convention.
Maybe, although I think the poll numbers in North Carolina are suggesting that he'll probably spend most of his fundraising resources elsewhere. President's got a full schedule today. He's got four fundraisers, Dan. So, you know, he's really buckling down on job creation and all sorts of other things.
So let's just be clear on this. President Obama has four more fundraisers today than President Reagan had in all of 1984.
Yes, slightly different rules at the time, but still the fact that he didn't have to have a single one of them. And as I recall, he didn't really worry about money during the home stretch, and he won 49 out of 50 states.
Yeah, so he did okay in November, as I recall.
Yeah, it worked out pretty well for him. On to martini number two now. Dan, and the petulancy of the Obama administration is reaching some new heights. You'd think they would have been relatively happy with winning three out of four components of the Arizona case yesterday. Not so, because the one that got the most attention is the one they lost. That's the one where police are allowed, if they pull you over for an unrelated offense, or stop you if you're not driving for an unrelated offense, and they suspect that you are in the country illegally, they can ask you to prove that you are here legally. And that was the one that was upheld 8-0. Even Justice Sotomayor, who Obama appointed to the court, said that that was constitutional. Not to be outdone, though, the Department of Homeland Security, led by former Arizona Governor Janet Napolitano, as soon as that verdict came down, basically decided the Department of Homeland Security is no longer going to cooperate with Arizona authorities. Arizona may not even have access to the federal database on illegals. And when Arizona officials call up the Department of Homeland Security and ask what to do with these people they've detained, they're pretty much just going to tell them to let them go every time unless they're a vicious felon. So good to see the Obama administration acting with a ton of maturity here as the court comes down with its ruling.
Yeah, it's not just immature, but it's lawless in the same way that the president's fiat version of the DREAM Act is lawless. It's an especially bold and, as you said, not just petulant, but just bold kind of smack in the face that it's coming right out and saying we are not interested in enforcing the immigration laws that we have on the books. This isn't about reform. This isn't about what our legal immigration policy should be. This isn't about any of those things. It's not about the DREAM Act, God knows. It's about not enforcing laws that are already on the books. And as far as the decision itself goes, there's kind of a divide here at National Review. The editor's take was that this was a win because the stop and check part of the law was upheld. But I tend to side with guys like Ed Whalen, who wrote on our site that, or Shannon Coffin, who wrote that this section is not long for the earth either, and the court left open the door to striking it down in the future. Basically, they said that they refused to strike it down before it was implemented, so they want to see how it's going to be implemented. But based on the logic of the majority and what I found to be a very disappointing decision, I don't think it's going to survive. I was talking to Rich Lowry this morning. For what it's worth, at the time this case went to the court, we were talking about how I would have ruled, and I would have ruled somewhere between, not that anyone cares how Justice Foster would have ruled, but I would have ruled somewhere between Scalia and the majority. I thought Scalia's opinion was, as usual, really rhetorically forceful and logically sound. But to me, there's an obvious distinction between the two sections of the bill that were struck down that created new penalties and new illegal acts and new crimes, and the two sections of the bill that quite simply are about enforcing existing federal law that the federal government refuses to enforce. And that's really what's at the root of Arizona's approach to immigration. And the fact that they felt the need to pass this bill in the first place is an indication of just how little the administration had been doing for them before they got so petulant about this ruling. It's not like they're going from being ideal partners in the fight against illegal immigration to non-existent partners. They were barely there to start with.
Rewarding crime in the hopes of attracting new voters. Hopefully that craven political strategy won't work, at least to a large extent. On to martini number three now, Dan. And we always have a special soft spot in the third martini for taking pot shots at the TSA, and why not? Here's the latest example of their unprofessionalism and uselessness. This is coming from the ABC affiliate in Indianapolis, ABC 6. John Gross, a resident of Indianapolis's South Side, was leaving Florida with the remains of his grandfather, a Sicilian immigrant who worked for the Penn Central Railroad in central Indiana, in a tightly sealed jar marked human remains. Gross said he didn't think he'd have a problem until he ran into a TSA agent at the Orlando airport. He says, they opened up my bag, and I told them, please be careful, those are my grandpa's ashes. She, meaning the TSA agent, picked up the jar. She opened it. I was told later that she had no right to even open it, that they could have used other devices like an X-ray machine. So she opened it up. She used her finger and was sifting through it, and she accidentally spilled it. About a quarter to a third of the contents spilled on the floor. She didn't apologize. She started laughing, and this guy was on his hands and knees trying to pick up some of the contents of the ashes and the bone fragments and so forth. And so, once again, the TSA making life a huge hassle for people who are just going about their business and are not a threat to anyone. And once again, when they clearly make someone's life just miserable for no reason at all, there's very little compassion in there. And this is coming at the time when a lot of people want to expand TSA to all mass transit. So those of you who commute on trains in the morning or take public buses, this is what you could be facing every day if, in fact, some of these people in Congress got their way.
I don't even have a joke here, Greg. It's just an awful story. It's one of the worst. It's right up there with all the padded down grandmas and get out of your wheelchair so I can feel you up stories that we hear coming out of the TSA. Airport security is important, obviously. I mean, there's nobody who thinks it isn't, but it's one of the more useless rituals that we've had to go through post 9/11. I'm not going to blanketly besmirch our fine security personnel, but a lot of these folks are just, you know, anyone who's traveled or who flies a lot knows that a lot of these guys are just like mall security guards, that they have a tiny little bit of power and they get such a kick out of using it. And so that's the reason why these horror stories aren't isolated. There's a new one every week, it seems like. And there just has to be a sensible way of sensibly separating people who are likely to blow up airplanes from grandmothers. I can't think of what it is, but there has to be one.
Yeah, it might be called profiling or something along those lines. People who fit a certain description who are most likely to do that. And, of course, you have huge civil rights debates about that. But the bottom line is that all these huge bells and whistles they have in place don't really necessarily make us any safer. They would, I'm sure, beg to differ. But given the hassle that most people have gone through as a result of these new security measures, who clearly don't pose any sort of threat, it's hard to see that all this money and all this, as you said, lording your minimal authority over people has actually accomplished a whole lot. Well, we'll have to leave it there for today. Dan, as always, great to talk with you. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Greg.
Daniel Foster of National Review Online. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join Jim Garrity and I on Wednesday for the next edition of the Three Martini Lunch.